for me, it's about the difference between urgent and important. So I think the smart organizations are going to differentiate between what's urgent and what's important.
I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Dan Smolin Podcast. We help people to navigate the future of work, to work that is profound, protects the planet, empowers people and communities, and is fun to do, meaningful work. The stories that our guests tell and the insights that they provide will inspire you to connect with work and experiences that stoke your passions and make the world a better place. For the future of work is meaningful work. As more of us get vaccinated to protect us from contracting COVID, some important questions come to mind about how we will experience work and the workplace in the post-pandemic age. And in our estimation, there was no better guest to pose top-of-mind questions than the globally recognized expert on emotional intelligence, Edith Richards. Edith helps people and organizations use emotional intelligence, or EQ, to achieve satisfactory engagement and understanding. And surely, EQ has emerged as a critically important practice of choice as we navigate our way back to traditional co-located spaces or continue to operate remotely. We cover a lot of ground in this episode, and we are sure that you will find the discussion with Edith both informative and entertaining. I spoke with Edith Richards in April 2021 over Zoom. Edith Richards, welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, Dan. Well, it's great to be here again.
And it's great to be back with you, my friend, as always. Hey, before we get started, I wanted to congratulate you on your brand new podcast. And for listeners out there, I'm wondering if you would tell us what your new podcast is called and what it is about.
It's called EQ at Work, and it's a podcast on emotional intelligence. So I really want to dispel a lot of rumors and myths about emotional intelligence. And I also want to capture some great stories from people I know who have used emotional intelligence to overcome some pretty significant obstacles in their lives. I'm going to be interviewing a different person every week. We've got 10 episodes in this season. They come out every Monday. So, you know, shout out to the listeners there. Just follow us on eqatwork.net or hashtag eqatwork all over social media, iTunes, Spreaker, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts.
Fantastic. I'm really happy to know that I'm going to be a guest on your podcast next Monday.
I know. I'm so excited about that. We are so excited. I mean, for me to finally have you as a guest and to interview you, it was really, really spectacular for me. And, you know, it's to all the folks out there, Dan's going to be talking about entrepreneurship, your career journey, and how that relates to emotional intelligence. It's a really great episode. Really hope you all tune in and appreciate you being a guest on this season, Dan.
Well, that's great. And I'm really looking forward to it. So let's get started. You know, as we are getting vaccinated, and I've gotten my first and I'll get my second probably by the middle of April 2021. As the rest of us get vaccinated and we start thinking about what work is going to be like in the post-pandemic age, I looked at that and I said, well, there's going to be a lot of good, but there's going to be a lot of conflict. And conflict is something that I think operates in the realm of EQ. And that's why we wanted to get you back on, Edith. So let's get started. I've got five questions I wanted to ask you that I think play into what we're going to have to contend with if we're back in an office environment, co-located with other people, engaging with people that we haven't been around. You know, a lot of us have been isolated in our Zoom rooms for the better part of 14 months or so. So let's
the walls here, you know.
So let's have at it. So the first question I have is, You're back in the traditional office and your boss or a coworker or a colleague thrusts their hand out to shake your hand, welcome you back. And what do you do? Do you shake their hand? Do you then grab for the Purell? Do you intentionally do something else like a fist bump, an elbow bump, which is kind of weird? Or do you have a discussion to say, well, let's talk about this. Should we be shaking hands? What are your thoughts on all of this from an EQ standpoint?
You know, fortunately or not, we don't have like a cattle prod with the word vaccinated on our forehead. So we're not going to know who's been vaccinated and who hasn't been. But I do have a great story to share about this question. So a couple of weeks ago, my significant other, Rick, and I were at the grocery store and we ran into a woman we both know. We haven't seen her in over a year. And she's a very friendly person. And under normal circumstances, she's a hugger. So she came up to us and, you know, really excited to see us. We were really excited to see her. And she said, well, you know, as you know, I'm a hugger. So I would love to hug you, but only if you're okay with that. If you're not, I'm perfectly fine with that. And, you know, as in most communications, it's not just the words that she's using, but it's her demeanor and her body language and her facial expression. And I know her and I know she wouldn't be offended either way if I hugged her or not. But I said, well, yes, I'd love to hug you. And Rick, my significant other, just he is definitely the more standoffish of the of the two of us. But he kind of put up his hand. He's like, no, that's okay. But you know, the point here is no matter what our comfort level is, and we're all going to have different comfort levels with this, we need to be mindful that other people don't necessarily have the same comfort level that we do.
Right.
And that's okay. Yeah. We have to know what our own boundaries are, but we don't have to push those boundaries on other people. And I think we can do that in a way that's respectful of wherever someone else is at the time.
So let's talk about that from an EQ standpoint, because there's no right or wrong or black or white or left or right in this. It's situational. I mean, you could be in a situation where your boss is going to shake your hand and you darn well better do it and then grab for the Purell afterwards, because having him or her accede to your request to not shake hands may be more of a burden to you from an emotional intelligence standpoint.
Well, first of all, I guess I should address the workplace policy of things. I think we'll probably get into this a little bit different, but I think as we do return to work, different workplaces are going to have policies in place regarding social distancing, regarding, you know, different levels of personal space, physical touch, things like that. Well, I shouldn't assume, but I'm going to assume in this case that because of the last year that we've lived through, I want to say that most people are going to be understanding about the whole shaking hands thing, but you're absolutely right. There may be some instances where they're not, and we could inadvertently offend someone or just make ourselves not look good because of that. But I think still in that moment, we have the choice of how to explain ourselves, so to speak. We can choose to be respectful of that other person's needs while maintaining our own boundaries.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's take another topic. How do we negotiate others' needs for personal space? Now, this is going to sound like a Seinfeld episode with the close talker, you know? I mean, I've worked with people that will get right into your grill and talk to you. And I never really had a problem with that before because it doesn't really bother me. But I'll tell you, I'm really conscious of it now. And even when I am fully vaccinated, I don't know what I don't know. And I have to assume that others are not going to be comfortable, at least initially, being closer than either 6 or 3 feet distance.
Right. Yeah. And we've seen some pretty horrific behavior on the news. I mean, who knows why they're doing the things that they're doing, but it's very disturbing. So I think we have a right to be concerned about this. So by way of answering your question, here's an example. So let's say that you are someone who has really avoided people during the pandemic for whatever reason. I mean, maybe there, you have an underlying health condition yourself, or there's elderly parents at home, or whatever. You're not ready to be around a bunch of strangers. Whatever the reason, I think it's first prudent to acknowledge that's okay. That's your reason. But let's say now you go out into the store and you see someone who's not following the rules,
right,
who doesn't have their mask on, who's, you know, going up to people and being, you know, very close proximity to other people. What do you do? That's the question. Like, what do you do when you see somebody who's behaving like that?
Right. And I've seen it go both ways. I've seen people react fiercely and create a bigger problem than it got started when the person intentionally or not invaded their space.
Yeah. And you know, when you're talking about that and that person, I mean, it can go either way. We have the choice, like whatever it is that we're dealing with. And if we see these people following the rules or not, it's our choice to behave in a certain way or not. Right. So in this case, like there's a couple of choices. So I have a friend. She has no qualms about approaching people within, you know, the allotted 6 feet and just saying, please put on your mask. You're in a public place and it's the policy of this store. She will say that to people. And of course, there's varying degrees of politeness that you can use when you're calling someone out. So you can choose to do that. You can also choose to let it go. If that person isn't bothering you, if they're far away from you, you can just let it go. That's another option. But I think the point here is just to recognize this, that we have a choice. And with these choices, is coming back to the emotional intelligence, how this relates to emotional intelligence. I think the point I'm trying to make here is we make a lot of assumptions. We're human. Mm-hmm. That's what we do. Mm-hmm. But when we're talking about a subject like this, where people have different boundaries, we don't always know what those boundaries are or why people have them until we stop and try to have a conversation with them. And I think that's the point you were alluding to before is, you know, hey, let's stop and have a conversation about this so that we can come to an agreement.
Indeed. Indeed. And I think the thing we're going to have to do is have honest conversations and go in with the assumption that together, let's figure out the answer to this.
Yes. That's, you know, again, it's the ideal outcome. Now, obviously there's, you know, there's going to be some bumps in the road along the way. But I think if we just go back to this, recognizing I have a choice, I always have a choice in how I can respond. There's a lot I can't control. I can't control this pandemic. I can't control the policies in my workplace. I can't control whether my boss thrusts his hand out and expects me to shake it or not. But I can always choose how I respond to that. And I think, you know, an emotionally intelligent person is going to be able to find that balance between their own boundaries and just being respectful of other people's boundaries.
Good points. So let's move on. How do we help those who want to work from anywhere? Now, this question of mine comes from a lot of reading that I've been doing about how the economy is going to reopen again. And you hear, we're all going to be returning to the office. I forgot which head of a Wall Street financial institution said that. I almost fell off my chair because it doesn't recognize the fact that the world has changed. We're not going back to a traditionally co-located environment where people commute into large cities to the office the way we used to. Geez, my stockbroker, he's still working virtual now 14 months in, and as is his entire staff is doing it as well. It's going to fall upon senior management at companies to embrace the idea that some people need to work someplace else. Maybe because they are neurodiverse. Maybe they have Asperger's or loud sounds, and being around other people doesn't create a good environment for them to be productive at work. Or maybe it's just that they've had a lot of illness, or maybe they need to be working in the home community where they're based. So how do we help encourage that conversation to embrace the idea that, you know, perhaps some people can work wherever they choose and others, maybe it's okay if they want to work in the traditional office?
This can really become a nebulous issue and also a legal issue too. And I think there's a lot that we don't know yet. And again, each company is going to have their own policy related to this. Some companies, let's just face it, are more evolved than other companies, and they're truly going to be more flexible. Others have had to adjust to this new normal, and they're kicking and screaming along the way. We know that. I think there are those companies, again, whatever their reasons are, they don't want their employees to continue working remotely. In fact, at my workplace, we were having a conversation about this just the other day. I mean, there are some advantages to returning back to work. It's going to be easier to collaborate. It is good for exposure. I was giving a training session this morning, and I'm just struck by how cumbersome it is to be in a Zoom training session when everybody else is in the physical location and I can't interact with them as I would prefer to and as would be helpful for what we're trying to train on. There's things like that. So again, yeah, it can become a really difficult issue to deal with here. But this is what I do know. Companies can make it a policy that employees get vaccinated. Right. And they must report to work in person. The companies can make policies related to that. Now, the question becomes, can an individual opt out of that? So yes, there is an option to do this through ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Right. Act. So if an employee has a legitimate reason for not being able to return to work or not getting the vaccine, some of the things you alluded to, loud noises, smells, you know, a documented disability. Also, Title VII of the Civil Rights Act requires an employer to accommodate an employee's religious beliefs unless it would cause undue hardship on the business. So that's another issue at play here. It often comes down to companies and what their individual policies are going to be. But I really do think for most organizations, they have seen that most employees can work very productively at home or remotely. And, you know, I have to admit, I really enjoy the flexibility that I've had for the past year. And I like not having to dress up and put on makeup and get stuck in traffic and spend money on gas. I mean, there's just so many advantages to remote work. And I think most companies really are starting to see this too. And I know you had a guest recently talking about agility and how important it is that people get on board with being agile. So it's a good opportunity for companies and for us as individuals to exercise that part of ourselves.
What you said is very rich. So I'll try to unpack some of it. My prior experience as a headhunter was that the old school hiring manager loved the control of having that person in his or her physical proximity. And the idea was, well, if I don't see them, I don't know if they're working. We're long past that. I think we're at a point right now where I think enough hiring managers have seen the benefit, certainly of hybridizing the workplace environment so that Edith gets to work remotely 3 days a week. She's at headquarters 2 days a week, and maybe gets changed up as need be. And headquarters, as Marty Constant, you just mentioned, our agility expert, and Nellie Hyatt, our workplace expert, have said that the idea of the headquarters is going to be not necessarily where we all work, but certainly where we all gather from time to time to get things done. It's more of a gathering point. And so I think coming out of this pandemic, we're never going back to the way things were. And that's probably a good thing. I think some people have been liberated. They're actually working more productively by allowing themselves where they get to work. In my old career, I spent hours on trains and behind the steering wheel of my car commuting. It was expensive and took a toll on my health. I think people are finding they're healthier now.
Yeah, a lot of us, I think, are. you know, you're talking about that old school management style, this command and control. And if you're not in the office, I don't know if you're working or not. Again, a lot of people are realizing that doesn't work anymore. You've got to be flexible and accommodating with your employees if you want them to give their best. If they're operating out of fear, I mean, let's face it, they won't give their best.
So this next question is inspired by my 91-year-old mother, who famously said, too much of a good thing is not a good thing. And that too much of a good thing has to do with Zoom. A great tool gathered us all together when we couldn't leave the house. But like a lot of things, too much of it is really not good. We've seen what happens to young people, students who have become disengaged because they're not around their peers and maybe aren't learning as effectively. I've heard horror stories about A students who have become D students because they're not in the classroom and Zoom does not fit with their learning style. So I guess my question is, how do we reduce Zoom time and encourage more asynchronous communication, Edith? What are your thoughts?
Well, we've all heard this term Zoom fatigue. And before the pandemic, I don't think we heard it. I had never heard it, but then it was just a month in and I could immediately relate to what it is. I've noticed myself, if I'm on Zoom, it doesn't matter if it's a personal thing, just, you know, having a Zoom with friends or a work-related thing. I mean, 2 hours and I'm done. And usually it's less than 2 hours. It's much more tiring than being in person with somebody, you know, and we could have a whole other conversation on why that is. But I mean, the fact is, as you alluded to, it just creates a lot of internal stress when we have to communicate this way. And it's not natural for a lot of people. So yes, a shift towards more asynchronous communication can be one way to help with this. And some organizations will prioritize asynchronous communication. And I think personally, I think that's a very smart thing to do. That doesn't mean that they don't have to have real-time meetings or real-time communications. I think the smarter organizations are going to know when certain situations call for a Zoom or whether Zooming is better handled in a different way. Let me pivot into another part of this, because I think really what your question is getting at is, for me, it's about the difference between urgent and important. So I think the smart organizations are going to differentiate between what's urgent and what's important. Urgent tasks are things that have to be dealt with immediately. Things like phone calls or some kind of impending deadline or some type of situation where you have to respond very quickly. Whereas important tasks are things that contribute to longer term missions and goals. And one of the problems here with this is sometimes your definition of what's urgent isn't the same as your boss's definition of what's urgent.
Right.
And then the other problem is that the important things, important tasks, become urgent if you keep putting them off. So again, I think the smart companies and smart people, first, they know the difference between what's urgent and what's important. And they also know, really, that most things aren't urgent, let's face it. But the more we work remotely, the more we need to be more thoughtful in how we communicate. So making things sound urgent, even when they aren't, that's just something that's going to make people more anxious. There's going to be a lot of negativity associated with that and working remotely. Because, I mean, I've heard stories about this too, that some people who've been working remotely, that they're consumed with work. They have more work than they can handle. You start talking to them about what that means and what's happening here. And this is what it comes down to. It's like, well, what's urgent and what's important? So I think as we're adjusting to this, adjusting to remote communication, it's just very easy to miscommunicate or misinterpret someone's intentions. And we can't get past that until we are able to stop and have a conversation about it.
So things like status updates may happen on Zoom, but things that need more depth and more consideration may happen asynchronously.
I mean, that's a great way to handle it. There's a lot of evidence now that more frequent but short team meetings are where you're going to get the most bang for your buck with your staff, for example. So having a weekly team meeting, but keeping it to 30 minutes, no more than 30 minutes, that's where you're going to get the most engagement from your team. That's what more recent research is revealing to us.
Fascinating. Well, I got one more. And it borrows from a term that Alan Greenspan had come up with, this wonderful term called irrational exuberance. And his frame had to do with, you know, we're kind of losing our minds about the economy and being careful. And I think some of our human nature, Edith, is going to be, well, we've all been cooped up, so we're all going to get frisky again, and we're going to be hugging each other, and we're going to have office romances, and we're going to lose our minds. So how do we balance the fact that, you know, maybe it's okay to be affectionate to a certain degree with the fact is you're going to work and you got to be a professional?
It's what you're saying. It's reminding me of like the Roaring Twenties.
Exactly.
That is
exactly. You know, yeah. In the Roaring Twenties followed the Spanish flu pandemic.
Right. And World War One as well. So people were really ready for some good news and good times. And I think that we as a society can very much relate to that now. So irrational exuberance. So full disclosure here, I had to look that term up too, because I didn't know exactly. I could kind of intuit what it meant, but I'm like, well, what does this really mean here? You explained it very well there. So I guess the best way for me to respond to this is going back to emotional intelligence and focusing on this element called reality testing. This is our ability and tendency to look at data points in the world. And we're talking about real data, not our interpretation of the data. And this is one of those elements, this one part of emotional intelligence that we are notoriously bad at it. And we see it all over the news. It's information is being reported, but that's someone's spin on that information. It doesn't always provide us with a clear and accurate picture. And of course, that leads to confirmation bias. And that, in my opinion, is one of the most dangerous things in the world today, is that. So what I'm really saying here, so let me give you this example of reality testing here. Okay, so I'm at work and I'm walking down the hall and I see my boss walking towards me and I say hello and she doesn't respond. Mm-hmm. She keeps on walking. So the data point here is I saw my boss in the hallway. I greeted her. She didn't reply and she kept on going. Now, the problem with that is for many of us, we take that information and we immediately act on it.
Right.
We interpret it very quickly. And so we may say to ourselves, oh my gosh, what did I do? She must be mad at me because she didn't say hi. Mm. And then you can start going over and over every interaction you had with your boss and it snowballs. And then we can get really anxious and fearful. Or another option is we might get really pissed off. Well, how dare she not respond to me? And then I could go to my coworker and I say, oh, so-and-so is in a really bad mood today, so you better watch out. And then the rumor mill starts. Or we can say to ourselves, oh, I remember she had a meeting at this time this morning, and she was probably really focused on getting to that meeting. So we can think about, spend so much time thinking about the what ifs or you know, and we don't recognize that it's not the data itself, it's our interpretation of the data. And it may simply not be true. It may be true or it may not be true. And then what if my boss just walks out of the bathroom and she says, oh yeah, sorry, I didn't say hi earlier, but I was really busy. There's so many spins on this, I think we can make in our minds. Whereas if we can just stop ourselves, if we can just pause and focus on that data point and ask ourselves, how do I know this? And that can, you know, keep us from going down those often unhelpful paths. Looking at the data itself, not what we wish the data to be or what we fear the data to be. There's so many unhelpful directions that can be stopped if we can train ourselves to do that.
And as many of us go back to traditional office settings, as we look towards hybridizing our workplaces, I think the timing is right to have these conversations and maybe ask all these questions. And oh, by the way, update those employee handbooks to include all of these behaviors, those that are acceptable and those that are not. This has been a lot of fun, Edith. Thank you so much for being back on the podcast. Say one more thing, because we talked about EQ, and I'm sure there's going to be some people out there that are going to say, hey, I want to learn more about this. Can you point our listeners to your social media?
Absolutely. You're welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn. I try to be pretty active on LinkedIn. My website is atopcareer.com, A-T-O-P, career.com. And you can also follow my podcast, EQ at Work, through eqatwork.net.
Fabulous. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Links to Edith Richards' social media are provided in the show notes for this episode at dansmolin.com. Please join us again for more inspiring stories from people who are real-time reimagining the work that we do and hope to do. You can subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts or listen to current and past episodes on our website at dansmolin.com. And please take a moment to positively rate and comment wherever you listen to this podcast, because that helps us to connect with new listeners. I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Dan Smolin Podcast. Thank you for joining us on an amazing journey to the future of work doing meaningful work. And do remember this, our best days lie ahead. Let's connect again next week.